We live in a world that celebrates external success above all else. In The Road to Character, David Brooks identifies a profound cultural shift from what he calls the little me culture of humility to today's big me era of self-promotion. This transformation is striking. In 1950, only 12% of high school seniors considered themselves very important persons. By 2005, that number had skyrocketed to 80%. Our society constantly reinforces messages of self-importance. You are special. Trust yourself. Be true to yourself. Even institutions like the Girl Scouts have shifted from teaching self-sacrifice to self-focus. But what if this obsession with external achievement is preventing us from building what truly matters? Character. What if the qualities that make a meaningful life aren't the ones that look good on a resume, but rather those mentioned in our eulogies? Most of us live with an internal tension between two competing selves. There's Adam I, our ambitious, career-focused self who seeks external success and status. Then there's Adam II, our deeper self who longs for moral virtue and inner character. Our culture overwhelmingly celebrates and rewards Adam I achievements, while Adam II development gets neglected. The most impressive people somehow integrate these competing selves. They radiate what Brooks calls moral joy, a remarkable inner cohesion. These rare individuals answer harsh words with soft responses. They maintain dignity when humiliated. They perform acts of service without self-promotion. What's striking is how different they are from our cultural ideal. They don't maximize self-expression or pursue happiness directly. Instead, they've built character by confronting their weaknesses and developing self-effacing virtues: humility, restraint, and self-discipline. Building character follows what Brooks calls a U-shaped curve. You must go down to go up. The journey begins with moral crisis, where self-deception shatter, forcing humility and self-awareness. In this valley of humility, people learn to quiet the ego, allowing them to see the world clearly and understand others. This creates space for unexpected grace, help from surprising sources, and undeserved love. Frances Perkins discovered her calling after witnessing the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in 1911. Watching trapped workers jump to their deaths transformed her from a genteel social worker into a determined politician. Unlike today's advice to follow your passion through self-reflection, Perkins asked, "What does life want from me? What are my circumstances calling me to do?" This perspective starts not with the self, but with one's concrete circumstances. A vocation differs from a career. While careers are chosen for advancement, vocations choose us. They're callings that make life unrecognizable unless pursued. Dwight Eisenhower's life demonstrates character development through self-discipline. Despite his naturally hot temper, he learned to control his emotions through practice. His staff recognized warning signs, set expressions, prominent temple arteries, even his choice of brown suits. He developed practical strategies, like listing troublesome people in his diary to contain anger. Anger cannot win. It cannot even think clearly, he noted. Sometimes he'd write an offender's name on paper and discard it as a symbolic release. This discipline stemmed from lessons learned from his mother, Ida, who raised 5 successful sons in an era where life's fragility demanded self-control. Without modern medicine, accidents could be devastating, fostering an ethos of restraint. Ida taught that willpower alone wasn't enough. One needed outside help. Her approach balanced discipline with tenderness, teaching that love could reorder desires by focusing on higher purposes for family, country, and those in need. Dorothy Day's life shows how suffering can transform through moral perspective. Raised in an emotionally distant family, she developed religious feelings that clashed with her home life. At 18, she left for New York to write, finding purpose in radical politics despite loneliness. Her early years brought drinking, housing instability, and what she called the sadness of sin. a failed relationship ended in abortion, abandonment, and attempted suicide. Motherhood sparked her transformation. Though her anarchist partner opposed her pregnancy, it brought unexpected joy. Childbirth was revelatory. Earthquake and fire swept my body, she wrote. Holding her daughter Tamar, she felt a vast flood of love and joy, and the need to worship. Day's conversion to Catholicism came with persistent self-doubt as she reconciled her radical past with new faith. Through daily dawn mass, prayer, fasting, and confession, she found a spiritual center that transformed fragmentation into wholeness. A. Philip Randolph emerged as America's preeminent civil rights leader, organizing marches through moral authority. Born in 1899 near Jacksonville to a minister father and seamstress mother, he grew up in respectable poverty, with a code of dignity that transcended material circumstances. Though not religious, Randolph cultivated impeccable manners and perfect elocution that made him impossible to humiliate. Randolph embodied public-spiritedness based on self-control, combining political radicalism with personal traditionalism. When advisor Bayard Rustin questioned his unfailing politeness, Randolph insisted, "We must, with good manners, accept everyone. We will need them when this is over, because we must show good manners after we have won." Together, Randolph and Rustin developed a philosophy combining fierce conviction with deep self-skepticism. Though dignified, they employed aggressive strategies, knowing meaningful change rarely comes through gentle persuasion. They shared a worldview acknowledging both social and personal sin, building inner structures to contain chaotic impulses through self-giving and redirecting their lives from their worst tendencies. Augustine's life journey challenges modern self-help wisdom. Despite achieving Roman career success, he felt internally fragmented, enslaved by his pursuit of admiration and hypersensitive to criticism. Looking deeply within, Augustine discovered a vast universe beyond his own control. He realized the futility of gradual self-reform, seeing that the core problem was believing himself life's captain. Our minds are too vast to fully know, emotions too changeable to order, and self-deception too profound for complete honesty. Augustine found that true inner joy comes through receptivity to something greater, not through self-cultivation. The paradox? As people become more dependent on something beyond themselves, their capacity for ambition grows. Dependency doesn't create passivity, it fuels accomplishment. Being flawed is natural and universal. We're all stumblers, finding life's meaning through our efforts to become more graceful over time. The stumbler faces imperfections honestly, finding self-understanding through humility, and treating each weakness as an opportunity for growth. Joy emerges indirectly, through interdependence, gratitude, reverence, and dedication to commitments greater than oneself. People improve when they humble themselves to learn, occasionally achieving moments when outer ambition aligns with inner aspiration, when Adam 1 and Adam 2 unite in purpose. Modern life's central fallacy is believing external achievements, Adam 1, produce deep satisfaction, when only moral development, Adam 2, leads to true fulfillment. The path to meaningful life begins not by asking, "What do I want from life?" but "What does life want from me?" This shift in perspective marks the beginning of character and a life worth eulogizing.